Digital content on WAER is supported by California Closets of Syracuse, creating custom storage solutions for all areas of the home, as well as in professional offices and commercial spaces. Learn more at californiaclosets.com or by visiting their DeWitt showroom.
One of my favorite dishes growing up was a Thai twist on Hainanese chicken, which is a chicken simmered with garlic, ginger, scallion, and then you use the same ingredients to cook the rice with the chicken broth, and then you make like a really nice and very spicy black bean garlic sauce to go with it.
Welcome to Syracuse Speaks. I'm Katie Sulkowski. The food scene in Syracuse is quite different from what it was even 5 years ago. Take Syracuse's Downtown Dining Week, for example. Back in 2015, 26 restaurants participated. This year, there are 46. I'm joined today by WAER News Director Chris Bolt.
With all these additions and changes to where Central New Yorkers go out to eat, it brings up the idea of the area's food identity. What is Syracuse's traditional identity, and how is that changing? How do changing demographics affect restaurants? And what can we expect to see more of, and what's just a passing fad?
Joining us for this discussion today is Rich Stroob, chef and partner at Eden, a farm-to-table restaurant in downtown Syracuse, Adam Sudman, market manager of Salt City Market and founder of My Lucky Tummy, and Jacob Pucci, Syracuse.com food and dining writer. Thank you all for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So I want to open it up by asking, what, in your opinion, are Syracuse staples? What is the food you have to eat? What is the restaurant you have to go to when you are either first coming to Syracuse or as a Syracuse resident?
I mean, like the Italian restaurants, probably the most prevalent, you know. And yeah, I mean, you know, there's always the classics. I mean, Dinosaur, barbecue, I mean, Possibilities downtown for Italian. Me and Twin Trees Pizza. There's a few. There's a lot, actually, I would say, for, you know, those kind of landmark restaurants here, for sure.
Yeah. Adam, what do you think?
This is going to be an indirect answer, but I will say some of the best meals of my life I've had in Syracuse. And I would say, you know, coming from New York City, having a lifestyle where I got to travel around the world on a whim, which was really great before having kids. Kids are great, too. Some of the very best meals I've had, not at restaurants, but behind closed doors. There's some incredible, what really drew me to town was incredible talent, particularly on the north side, with those refugee and new American families that have been resettled over the last decade. Meals from Iran and Burma and South Sudan and places that meals I can't have, even in the sort of storied dining scene of New York City. So I'm excited to see some of those come to the fore. For me, my private institutions are sometimes there's a little bit more of an informal economy in some of those grocery stores on the north side. And so there's a grocery store, Epon, which is a Burmese store on Butternut Street, corner of Butternut Park. Sometimes there'll be a pot of something at the cash register, you know. Sometimes it'd be a party out back on the loading dock. Things like that. There's an Iraqi market, Al-Tanur. It's named after the old, you know, predecessor of the tandoor oven coming out of Iran. It's an Iraqi market on Grant Boulevard. And, you know, years ago, I remember I would go there and he'd say, you know, I got something underneath the counter for you. And it was this wonderful dessert from Somalia.
Oh, wow.
And so some of these hidden gems, if you look around, are really exciting to me.
I would agree with Adam. You know, when I first came here, my first visit to Syracuse was Dinosaur Barbecue and Francesca's and Joey's. But I would agree with that, and there's a lot here that people don't know about from the outside. So it's been pretty fun to explore some of that. Like Habiba's is awesome.
Habiba.
Yeah. There's a great food scene that's growing here, so it's pretty exciting to watch.
And that leads into, what do you think Syracuse's food reputation is outside of Syracuse, and is that accurate at all?
You know, I think like the places I mentioned, you know, that I think those are the public ones that people know about. You know, that's kind of why I said it, just as like, you know, people see that and that's what they see. They see these, you know, the downtown restaurants that have been around for a while that, you know, are like if I'm visiting once, what's the most popular place? It's going to be those, you know, the downtown places for sure. You know, I mean, I agree with Adam. I mean, I think like, you know, the north side is probably the most exciting growing food, you know, area in the city just for the variety and these sort of, hidden gems, secret places that people probably don't, you know, they would walk by. They're not like as flashy and, you know, advertised maybe as well. But talk about the quality of food. I mean, it's unparalleled. So
is there a way to look at some of these places? I mean, Dinosaur, we've mentioned. Possibilities, we've mentioned. There's many others. Twin Trees, a lot of the Italian places, you know, it's sort of one of the staples of Syracuse. Is there any way to look at them and say, here's why that works? I mean, Possibilities, for example, you can never walk in and get a table at dinner hour. You know, Dinosaur is always busy. Have they just gotten a reputation so big, like you say, Jacob, that they're the places to go? Or is there a concept there that, Rich, you're a restaurateur, is there a concept there that's just going to work, or they've just made work?
Well, I think the concept behind Possibilities and Dinosaur Barbecue and some of these other places that have been around a long time is that they've really nailed their consistency. That's something that it's invaluable in the restaurant business. If you consistently deliver the same good product, you're going to get customers to come back over and over again because they know what to expect. And that's it takes a lot of the guesswork out of choosing a place to eat for people. And I think that's the most important thing for businesses like that. Just providing a consistent product, delivering day after day. And, you know, over time, you're going to build a clientele that's going to pack your restaurant every day, hopefully.
Consistency is so hard. The other piece that's really hard that I think is essential is how you make people feel coming in there. What's that energy like? I see a lot of restaurants, most restaurants, frankly, not able to do that consistently. It's an emotionally exhausting thing to do. And to hit that day in, day out, at the end of a 14-hour day, 16-hour day, to have that kind of vibe and atmosphere and look and aesthetic, both of those two places really, really do so, I think, really well.
Are there places that you'd say are similar that are in some of the suburbs? I know kind of our focus sometimes is downtown, or like the north side has some, you know, dynamism going on. Mm-hmm. Are there places that you know, have kind of gotten that a little bit? One that comes to my mind in the north side or North Syracuse is Nestico's, that has its own little thing, like it has its clientele. They've gotten that consistency. People know about them. Not as well known as the places that we've mentioned. Do you have others that maybe that you've been to, Jacob, that kind of have?
Yeah, I mean, you know,
their footing is strong.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just like a little aside. I mean, I love like the talking about Nestico's. I mean, Italian restaurants is such like a safe bet here in Syracuse. You don't see many opening now as much because they've been open. They've been open for like 25, 30 plus years, some, you know, longer than that. That's part of the Syracuse identity. People, you know, look for that. You know, Adam and Rich here, I mean, they're part of this new wave of new cuisines coming in. But like, it's a meat and potatoes town, traditionally speaking, I feel like, and Italian, you know, as well. You know, I hate to use the term comfort food. I really do. I don't like it. But like for Syracuse, I feel like that's a Syracuse comfort food, is Italian food.
Well, the other thing we haven't talked about that fits exactly right in there is diners, you know, like classic diners, whether it's the Gem or Stella's or those. I mean, how much are those part of our scene? Do you guys go to any of those? Do people talk about those?
I mean, I know a group of friends and I go out to diners every Friday for breakfast. Hmm. It's sort of we're trying a new one every week to eventually do them all. I don't know what we're going to do with all that information, to be honest with you. I think it's just for my own, you know, my own sake and for, you know, some delicious eggs. But, yeah, you know, I mean, you know, Syracuse even has its own diner food. I mean, like the Syracuse frittata. I did a kind of an essay about frittatas late last year. And, you know, just trying to find the history of it. And, like, that's, you know, that one dish, like that scramble of mix of potatoes and pepperoni, which finds its way in there too, and broccoli and onions. You know, I mean, like, and that style is unique to Syracuse, and that's another, you know, like if Syracuse had a diner food, that's going to be it. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot there, and frittatas are great. So.
And how do demographic? I mean, we hear a lot. You've been talking about Italian, meat and potatoes. All these foods have certain connotations of who is eating these foods, and Syracuse is definitely changing in who is living here, who's coming here. So how do demographics play a role in restaurants that open, restaurants that are existing, and sort of food history in that very broad sense?
I'd say that beyond food, we've seen massive changes in how we communicate and stay connected as a society. Mm. I mean, I grew up in food and can still remember when something like arugula or sushi was really outré or really, I don't know if I'll try that, right? We look back on that and we laugh a little bit. What we're comfortable with and curious about, and when I say we, I don't just mean foodies. I think a lot of people are not just staying in their lane, getting curious about what's that person doing over there? What else is available to me? I think we're a lot more culturally curious and bolder than we used to be 20, 30 years ago. So that's bigger than Syracuse. It's bigger than the United States, really. But it does touch everything.
Yeah, I would agree with Adam. I mean, even you said 20, 30 years ago, even 5 years ago, like when I first came down here, and it's not just Syracuse, I think that's all over. People are more interested, I feel like, in food. It's becoming a bigger part of people's lives. They seek out new things. You know, I don't know if it's the exact reason, to be honest, but, you know, people are, like, they're interested in, like, new cuisines opening. Mm. You know, new restaurant opening with a new cuisine that hasn't been here before. That's exciting for people now. And, like, people are willing to go outside their usual lanes, even in Syracuse, which I said is sometimes a little behind some of the national trends. But you know, they get here eventually, and I feel like people are kind of opening their eyes to a lot of new things here, which is really exciting.
Yeah, I'd say that's, you know, that's the case in the whole country. I mean, you look at Anthony Bourdain did a great job just promoting other cultures, and mm-hmm. Food TV has really given information to people that they didn't have before and opened their eyes to a lot of things. So I think that over the past couple of decades, I mean, even from when I was a kid, you know, we used to go out to Burger King and that was like a big deal. Mm-hmm. But now I think that people are stepping out of that box and trying different things, and it's pretty exciting.
Rich, I mean, as someone who's trying something a little bit new and different and there's a concept behind it, what do you hear from diners? How much do you feel like you have to, I don't know, compete against the classics, whether it's diner food, comfort food, Italian food, kind of the staples, if you will, to get somebody to move out from there to try something that they might not know exactly what they're getting?
Well, I would call our food classic more. It's more classic than a lot of the things that I've actually seen around here. You know, Syracuse traditionally was a city where agriculture came into the city and got cured by the salt mines here. Like all the salt preserved the food to ship to other places. That's why it's the Salt City. That's the history of Syracuse. It's really interesting. I feel like we're kind of trying to bring that back. You know, not only in the style of cooking over a wood fire is unique, but people have been doing it for thousands of years. We're not doing anything new. It's really comfort food at the end of the day. That's how I see it anyway. So it's pretty exciting to bring it back a couple of steps. And I think that we're really putting some raw emotion into it. So when people come in and they see what's going on, they see the emotion behind it. They see the intent behind it. We don't really have anything to hide. We have an open kitchen. You can see everything that's going on in the restaurant. So we're really trying to be very very upfront about what we're doing. And I think that people gravitate towards that because they want something real. Like when people go out to eat, they want something real that they can see, that they can, you know, it's very tactile. It's very in your face. So it's a pretty cool vibe that we create at the restaurant, to Adam's point.
Do you feel like that is a little bit of the attraction?
I mean, I think
more than just what's on the plate, that there's a little bit of an experience. You feel like you're a little more connected to the kitchen staff and you know, every step of that process.
I hope so. That was my intent with the design behind the restaurant. I'm a chef, first and foremost. I've been doing that 25 years, not a restaurateur. But I think the concept and just having it open for everybody to be able to see and experience. And we experience it too. We experience the feedback from the diners. So it's pretty cool to watch what's going on in the dining room, and then the kitchen kind of feeds off of that. It's really neat. It's like putting on a show every night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess Mrs. Moore, just to Rich, but, you know, I think Eden is sort of that new, you know, kind of redefining what fine dining is. You know, and you being a prime example here in Syracuse, where, like, you know, Eden is, I mean, you know, at a price point where people would think it might be a fine, you know, it is like a fine dining experience, but in a way that is open, it's a show. It's like, you know, it's not like, you know, traditionally it's a white tablecloth, you know, the kitchen far away, you know, the food just comes out. Like you see it. It's, you know, the name even itself, it has like a primitive element, but in such a refined presentation. And, you know, again, you're seeing that everywhere. And now, you know, thanks to Rich here in Syracuse too.
Thank you. I did the white tablecloth dining for 6 or 7 years, and I thought it was so sterile. I mean, I've had some wonderful meals in restaurants like that, French restaurants that were, and I've worked in a few French restaurants that had that kind of vibe. I'm happy to see food move away from that.
I wonder, going to Adam's point about curiosity, is it also sort of an accessibility thing that certain foods are becoming more accessible to more people through concepts like Eden, but also through increases in different people's living in our community?
It's astonishing, really. Yeah. The things that I never would have thought that you could find what you could find in a short little drive around town. It's a real... They are hidden gems, but there are gems to be found.
Do you guys have any thoughts, and Jacob, this might be from businesses you've seen come and go because you've seen a number of them, and Rich and Adam, just maybe your opinion. Why do things make it and not make it? Certainly restaurants go in and out of business. As somebody who lives downtown, I've seen, storefronts that should get plenty of foot traffic past them. Why do things not make it? What do they fail to get to an audience, diners, attention, whatever?
I mean, I think Rich could probably tell you firsthand that running a restaurant is a hell of a lot of work. Yeah, you got to love to cook, but, you also need to run a business, too, which is not easy. And there's a lot of upfront expense, and there's risk involved. And, are people going to buy your product? If they're not, are they going to pay what you're charging? Are they not? Maybe more so than other, even more so than other businesses, there's such an upfront expense. And, you just hope that people want what you have to offer. And, there can be a litany of reasons why a restaurant closes. Sometimes it's as simple as the owner just wants to retire. But a lot of times it's they can't keep up with the current, with competition. You can probably tell that, having a active social media presence, advertising your food on there. I mean, very few people, especially in my generation, the younger folks, are going to go at a restaurant blind without looking at any reviews. They want to see pictures of the food before they go there. A website with a menu. If you don't have that, people are going to be like, I don't know what I'm not sure about this place. And obviously there's tons of places that don't have any of that and they do super successfully. For whatever reason, they don't have that. But for a lot of places, that's kind of a standard now. So you kind of keep up a little bit with the times.
Adam?
It sounds like great fun, right? To own your own restaurant. I think of a friend I used to have that would teach creative writing. And he was always in the business of dissuading people who wanted to write a novel from staking everything on writing a novel or becoming a poet, right? At the same time, for our sort of, when we were doing these initial information sessions for the Salt City Market, I felt like I was often in the business of dissuading people from owning a restaurant. And I've had literally... Now hundreds of people say, I'm ready, I'm in. And then you start to tell them a little bit about it. And the look on everyone's face, it's the same look. Just like, I didn't realize all this was involved. You're really looking for, I think you've got to be a bit of a unicorn. It's a really rare person that can do that, that can handle the math, but have the love, have the stamina and do the storytelling, I think it is as well. I mean, we'd say you throw out social media, but there's, I think to really do it, the ones that I admire are storytellers and can consistently convey what they have to offer and make you feel welcome, back into you. Just those few things alone, that's a hard balancing act right there.
Rich, I'll have you weigh in too. What's the teetering point for you that you see sometimes?
Well, I mean, I think it's being unique. That's the direction I come at it from. So we definitely are unique. I didn't want to open another burger joint in Syracuse, though that may be on the table at some point. I think offering something that other people aren't doing is important. And I think that the businesses that you see that are growing and succeeding are the ones that offer something you haven't traditionally been able to get in Syracuse or anywhere around here. So that's... I think that's a big part of it. Also, to Adam's point, I don't know if it's being a unicorn. I think it's more just allowing yourself to be all consumed by a business. That's kind of, at the end of the day, you have to be able to do any number of things and separate those tasks in your mind pretty quickly and be able to fix the draft system, do the accounting, cook, wait tables, bartend, there's a lot that goes into it. So being able to separate yourself from different tasks and be able to manage multiple things at once is pretty important too.
I'll revise my characters. It's a unicorn in quicksand juggling a bandsaw and a flamethrower. Point taken.
Nice imagery.
Yeah. Well, we do have to take a quick break, but we'll continue this discussion in just a moment. Coming up on Syracuse Speaks, what does Syracuse's food future look like and what will influence it? Stay with us.
Maybe you're up at dawn. Or maybe you're, well, not a morning person. Wherever or whenever your day begins, start it with the show that connects you to what's happening everywhere. Morning Edition from NPR News is now available on demand weekdays from 7 to 3. Just say, Alexa, play Morning Edition. Morning Edition, on your schedule, from NPR.
And don't forget to set WAER as your local NPR station.
Oh, one of my favorites, chocolate molten lava cakes, because they're made from scratch. They look really difficult, but they are so delicious. When you cut into that, it's warm out of the oven and the chocolate just oozes out of the center, and they make homemade whipped cream. Once you've made homemade whipped cream or tried it, you will never buy whipped cream in the grocery store again.
Thanks for listening to Syracuse Speaks on 88.3 FM WAER. We've been talking about what makes Syracuse special that comes on a dinner plate. What is our food identity and why? Now we want to look at where are we going? What new culinary trends are taking shape and what might be driving that change? Joining us for our conversation are Jacob Pucci, food and dining writer with Syracuse.com. Jacob, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Adam Sudman, creative force behind the coming Salt City Market and founder of My Lucky Tummy. Adam.
Hi.
And Rich Strube, chef and partner of Eden Restaurant in Hanover Square.
Thank you.
Let's start with an imaginary stroll, if you will, around the city. Give me one highlight you would share about something that's new, not your own ventures right now, but a place that's really brought something different to Syracuse recently, whether that's the cuisine, the atmosphere, the concept. Adam, you want to start?
Gosh, the one that really comes to mind first and foremost is a friend, Habiba Baru's place over on North Salina Street. She is offering up Ethiopian food. And when I hear her talk about that food or offer that food, even if it's just she didn't have a moment to chat and was just serving at the table, you really have the sense that the line between business and home gets really blurry. You feel that sense of that very old sense of hospitality, of what it means to feed strangers and to take pride in what you're offering up, and that it has deep roots in her experience. Yeah.
Rich, do you have a favorite kind of new thing that you've seen come in the last year or two?
Well, I agree about Habiba's. I mean, that place is fantastic, and she is so gracious. I asked her how to make her injera one day, and she was totally upfront about it and told me exactly how to do it, which is awesome.
She's friendly, and she cusses like a sailor, and she cooks great food.
What's not to like?
Yeah.
You know, for me, mostly when I go out to eat, I go to places where I'm friends with the chef or friends with the owner. So Jared Stafford Hill owns St. Urban up here. I generally go out to eat there, or at Defee or Amano with Alex. So those are three great restaurants, in my opinion, and Kasai, too. They're doing great things for Syracuse, and we're all doing something different.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have the Modern French with Jared, Modern American with at St. Urban, Modern American at the Fee with Cody and Nick, the Ramen Shop, and then what Alex is doing with Italian food in the city is awesome. Just because he's taken the traditional view of Italian food in Syracuse and added like farm to table ethos to it. So he's buying stuff locally. It's seasonal. It's not just, you know, the same old red sauce, the same chicken riggies. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's seasonally driven.
Which, and that's at Amano.
At Amano, yeah. Which I just think is awesome for the city.
Yeah, no, actually, funny enough, I was going to say Amano. Because, like I said earlier, this is such a dominant Italian restaurant town. And like when I said, not many restaurants open, like new restaurants open of Italian. And he's one of them, you know, Alex at Amano, and doing something new in a town where it's so, like, you know, there's an expectation to what you get with Italian food. And, like, he's breaking those conventions and producing super great pasta, you know, the filled pasta. You know, it's incredible what they're doing over there. And, yeah, and, you know, just like, you know, Italians like such a quantity over quality. You know, it's, you know, this dinner doesn't count unless it's a pound of pasta on my plate. And, like, he'll give you, like, you know, 8 or 10 perfectly made ravioli, and it's like enough, and it's just so satisfying. And yeah, I mean, even I think just for, you know, Syracuse in particular, just because of that deep held idea of what Italian food should be here, breaking those conventions is like, it's impressive.
I think it takes a lot of guts. I mean, he's a young guy, but he's got a lot of guts to open an Italian restaurant in Syracuse. I wouldn't do it.
Well, and in a way, it's a different experience. If you go to Dominic's, say, or many other places, it is classic. And as you were saying earlier, it's an expected, it's a consistency thing. And you know what you're getting. You're getting a lot of food. Maybe that's one of the reasons you go. Where Amano is similar, but you know it's pushing the limits a right. little bit more. So it's, I think you're almost going for a different experience, even though the same diner might go to both places for different times.
I think we have a lot of reflections with our team at Salt City Market and the people that are trying to, you know, open up those stalls. And Amano we cite as an example a lot. The reason being is that they're building a bridge, right? They're meeting you where you're at. They know kind of what you're familiar with. They're going to, and they're going to surprise you with that. So trying to connect with people where they're at and to take them somewhere new. And particularly, I mean, all the places that Rich mentioned have this sense of that was made by someone's hands and someone really put individual thought into that item, as opposed to the mass-produced nature of so much food and of so much that we get. I think, you know, the biggest thing I think of is people are so tired of that and so not filled up by that, right? Either spiritually or intellectually. And so whether it's Habiba or somebody, you know, pushing technique in a different direction like Jared, someone really put their soul into this. And I think we're hungry for that kind of thing.
So I hear a lot of, like you mentioned, soul and local sourcing and sort of this sense of what food means to people. Is that a trend, or is it just sort of deeper that maybe is changing within our culture?
I think maybe it's a trend in the respect that people are looking for something real. And I think, you know, people are staring at their iPhones all day. They're staring at a screen. They're so fed up with things that aren't real and tactile that when you walk into a restaurant and you have a dinner that's made with care by somebody that really enjoys their craft, that's an experience that you can't get in any other way, except maybe, you know, if your loved one cooks it for you. And that's what we're trying to bring to the table. And I think that's what the other restaurants that I named are trying to bring to the table. I'm sure there's others out there. I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody.
Yeah, of
course. Forgive me.
I know. Whenever we mention names, we're forgetting 20 for everyone we mention.
But I think that's a really special experience. And that's something that, you know, as a restaurateur, I want to provide to people. Or even if you come to my home and you have dinner, you know, I want to provide something that, like, I make fresh pasta for people when they come over. That's always my go-to. Because it's something that I can make from scratch. It's all by hand. There's a little bit of craftsmanship that goes into it, and it shows that I care about them. Mm-hmm. And it's really heartwarming, you know. So I think that's an experience that people are leaning to when they go out, because people can heat up soup at home pretty easily. But to have a meal that's like really everything is thought about, that's a special experience, and that's worth going out to dinner for, I think.
You mentioned a meal cooked by your loved one. And I love my loved one, right? And I think, you know, and she tolerates me as well, right? But there is such a divide now, because our loved ones, us, you know, those of us that are cooking at home, we're doing less and less of it. We're getting worse and worse at it, right? We're warming up soup, right? And I think that's true across a lot, you know, pretty much all demographics, right? In the big picture. At the same time, when you look at the dining scene, you have access to so much more with sourcing. There's so many different, you know, cultures represented. You know, I used to have offices below the Food Network, and we always sort of like rolled our eyes at some of those shows. But at the, at the end of the day, like, they really did expose people to a lot more technique, culture, and so we're savvier as a country, I think, around those things. So the divide between what happens at home and what happens in some of these places in public is even that much wider. So it's even that much more remarkable what you can get between loved ones. Again, there's some loved ones that are doing great things, I'm sure. just not in my house. And what's on offer at some of these really, I mean, exceptional places that you never would have thought 10 years ago you would see in smaller cities.
Right. Jacob, back to Katie's question. When you're going to the many places that you go to, do you feel the soul of the people at times? Is that a thing you can't tangibly say this place excels because of that?
Sure. Yeah. No, you do. You know, that, I mean, obviously not every place. You know, some places are just to feed. You know, the ingredients may not be as, you know, premium ingredient or what have you. You know, it fills you up and probably for a low price, and you get it at a door, and that's, you know, it's sustenance. It works. It fulfills its job. But yeah, you can usually tell. I mean, you know, it's corny. You know, I hear it all the time from, you know, restaurant folks. You know, the secret ingredient is love, or, you know, you know, what's the secret to this? Oh, it's always, you know, family recipe. It's love. You know. And yeah, you know, you do, because you feel like you feel the care, and usually that translates to, you know, not wanting to cut corners, you know, not wanting to take a shortcut, even if it means more work or a little bit more money or what have you, you know, and usually the people can tell, you know, the diners can tell, and there's a reason why this, you know, the place that do that have been open for a long time, you know, this because they have a solid fan base, they you know, they depend on their quality. Depend on everything, you know, that they'll get a good meal when they go. And yeah, I mean, that's, you know, it can be talked about, like, the secrets to restaurant success. I mean, you know, consistency, you know, that it all kind of plays into that.
You're listening to Syracuse Speaks, and we're talking with Jacob Pucci there, Adam Sudman, and Rich Strube from Eden Restaurant. As far as trends go, where would you say that health weighs in terms of a trend that is driving restaurants? You know, the ones that come to mind would be like Original Grain or Core Life Eatery. Not to say there aren't healthy things on many menus, but is that something diners want enough to drive a menu?
I don't know. I don't choose a healthy option when I go out very often. you know, at home, I try and eat healthy. But when I'm out to eat, I am just going for it. I'm out to enjoy myself. So I'm not always... You know, like last night I had fried pork loin. I'm not choosing something because it's a kale salad. I'm out to enjoy myself. And I think a lot of other people see it that way too, but I don't know. I can't really speak to other people's opinions.
I mean, I think it depends on what your goal is when you go out. You know, if you're going for a special occasion, you know, if you're going out for your birthday, going out for a holiday, like, you know, you're probably going to go for it. You know, I think if you're looking at, like, I mean, you know, especially now, like, we talk about, like, you know, the gap between restaurants and home. Yeah, but now, like, with the advent of a bunch of delivery apps, like, you can get restaurant food at home, and it doesn't be, like, pizza delivery. It's any, like, a lot of restaurants, you can now eat at home, too.
Right.
So, like, you know, eating out is, like, people, like, eat out every day, you know, and that's the nature of it. If in that case, you do see more, you know, people looking for a healthy option. You know, they just don't want to cook it, but they want to eat it healthy.
Actually, it's interesting talking with a food supplier of restaurants at a conference. She said exactly what you said, Rich, which is that people will eat healthy most meals, but when they go out, they're looking for an experience. So even if they make a restaurant-supplied food item, it can be healthy, but it still has to deliver the experience, because that's what people are going out for more. Although I appreciate what you're saying, that so many people eat out many meals that the healthy options may fill some of that gap.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're talking about, like, lunch, you know, especially, like, downtown, and you get, like, a lot of a lunch crowd.
Right.
You know, you can't eat a big, you know, 20-ounce steak for lunch every day. Oh, that sounds great. But realistically, you know, that's why a place like Original Grain is packed, you know, at lunch, because it's, you know, it's healthy. It's, you know, and also there's a certain, you know, the vibe along with the healthy, you know, kind of newer, trendier foods, too. So you know, kind of want to be part of that.
Again, it's the storytelling as well, right? What story are they telling you? What story are you telling yourself about yourself? What story are you telling on Instagram? You know, a lot of this is fashioning a self, and that's okay.
I mean, kind of on the opposite end of Instagram, maybe in some ways, but you guys mentioned the sourcing a little bit, and there's definitely an increase in a focus on local sourcing. And I know, Rich, at Eden, that's a big thing for you guys. I mean, listing the names of where you get each item on the menu. Is this local sourcing, is it difficult, and how is it feasible? And is it something that we are probably going to see more of soon?
I hope so.
Yeah.
There are some awesome farmers and food producers here in Central New York. I'm from Vermont, and I grew up there. And so growing up there and learning to cook on a sustainable farm, it was all right there,
right,
which was amazing. I mean, I'd wake up in the morning and pick vegetables and serve them to people at night, which, you know, it's great. And they came from like half a mile away. Here it's a little more challenging. We have to use several different farmers to supply us all at the same time. So it's kind of a shuffling game trying to get, you know, certain things from certain people and figuring out who's doing the best of what kind of potato or, you know, what we think is special. And that's most of the concept behind our restaurant, too, is just highlighting what's actually special in Central New York. It's not just that it's local. It's who's doing the best of what. You know, like Matt Voles from Grey Rock Farm is growing these purple Viking potatoes that I'm in love with. So it was the first time I'd ever tasted a potato like that. And so he's going to be my source for those all summer because they're just awesome. And whatever he's doing with them is great. And I don't have to do anything else to him in my restaurant, just boil them and serve them. So that's awesome. And that extends to like our menu with the wines, the local spirits too. Mm-hmm. We're just trying to highlight what's great about Central New York. And there is a lot of awesome stuff here. So.
See, I mean, I think part of this also plays into what we talked about, you know, the dining scene changing over the last few years. You know, I mean, like restaurants listing the sources of food, you know, that's something people care about now. Like people go to Eden and they, you know, they see, oh, this is from a farm, you know, name of the farm and where it is. And Eden's not the only one in Syracuse or, you know, Syracuse area to do that. And like, you know, again, it plays into the, this, you know, people care about that now. You know, they care that what they eat is local. You know, I mean, obviously not every restaurant's going to do that, of course. I mean, logistically, it's going to be, you know, it's tough. But, you know, I mean, that's a big part of where our dining, I think, is going.
Is there, with your concept with Salt City Market, which you've mentioned, but we haven't really talked about it too much, how much will that play in? How much will what people do connected to sort of outside, because it has a market side as well as the dining side at Salt City Market, if I'm correct.
In regards to the local sourcing?
Yeah, the food vendors that are there.
That's a complicated answer. we manage the market and we want to be, I always joke, I sort of say, like we play Virgil to their Dante, right? As they're wending their way through all this, going upward, right? Always.
In the different layers of hell, yeah.
Yeah, but eventually it gets right. Sunny, all right? But at the same time, we want to be really sensitive that we're not squelching someone and saying, you have to source this way, you have to prep that way, right? I mean, math is math, right? So we're going to press on that, but we want folks to be creative and feel like this is their business, right? I think local sourcing, I came from that down in New York City, the city's oldest organic locavore caterer for the better part of a decade. It's tough, right? Particularly for smaller businesses. We're still finding our way through that as well. I know that a lot of the folks that are going to have stalls there that are interested in it are really interested in urban agriculture, what you can slip in there. We talk about Grey Rock Farm, right? Like I get their list of like potatoes every week and I'm freaking out because I feel like I knew all the potatoes, right? it's awesome what they have, right? I think it's going to be a case by case sort of thing, you know, and people are going to experiment with those things. And we really want to create a space. We're trying to create a space to show off the gems of town. And so, you know, we'll have the co-op grocery store in there. That's a nice sort of inroads for sourcing. We're really inspired by what happens in the regional market. I think the regional market in terms of places in town where different walks of life, you know, folks that normally stay in silos, cross paths, that's probably the best example in town. Mm-hmm. It's the best example on Saturdays, right? It's not all the time, right? Sure. So we're trying to emulate some of that. So we'd love to see some tables featuring some of this produce and see if some of those connections could be made between day tables and urban agriculture.
There's a lot of talk, I think, about the specialness of food. And so what role does food play in building community and sharing things and economic development in ways that extend beyond sustenance? And I think that with Salt City Market is a great example of that.
Well, yeah, right now we're trying. I mean, if you talk about purely on the economic face of things, a lot of folks are not participating in the local economy or you sort of left the urban core. We're trying to beckon folks back, even just for the day, right, by showing off some of the great talent that we have hidden away in town, some of those awesome, awesome cuisines. In terms of the significance of food beyond that, gosh, we could go on all day, right? I used to, when I first came to town, I started producing these pop-up events that were multi-cuisine pop-up events. And we all, you know, by necessity would cook in a shared kitchen. So, you know, five people in one kitchen trying to cook for 400 people, it's cozy. I think that's the word that New York City real estate agents use. It's cozy, right? That's great. But a lot of times in that necessity of coziness, somebody would look over their shoulder and see somebody doing something with a familiar ingredient, you know, and so you'd make a connection across thousands of miles right there. Oh, you use shallots too? Oh, we use that for medicine. You use that for culinary purposes. And these little nodes where we could make these connections. And I saw that happen time and time again. And I'm watching it happen now all over again. I think it's really, really cool. At the same time, particularly because I don't, in the Salt City Market, we're not focused on refugees and new Americans. That's certainly one really diverse group that I'm mm-hmm. really curious about. That's where I started when I moved to Syracuse. And one of the things I really took away from that was seeing again and again folks that had been forcibly displaced in really horrific, horrific ways find sort of comfort and grounding in food, both in the mm-hmm. sharing of food and in access to like a beloved ingredient or delicacy. I've worked with a lot of families that were on food stamps, mm-hmm. but would keep a little stock of something exquisite and they'd dip into it every once in a while mm-hmm. and they'd share it with me when I would come. Samanak, which is a porridge made from wheat, just wheat stirred for 24 hours, releases the sugars. And this happens in Afghanistan and Iran. And, you know, people would keep a bunch of this at the ready, this family that I used to work with. And they invite me over every year when it comes around for springtime. And they'd share it with the neighbors, even though they had no real direct connection. But they made a bridge and they said, we're sharing this with you. This is what we do.
Special to them. And
you're our neighbors now.
Yeah, that's a terrific story.
It's interesting that, you know, the concept of economy. So there's the financial economy, which is, you know, we try and source things locally because I want to spend money with my friends that I know work as hard as I do to create things, to create food. It's a really hard job farming. So the people that I know that do it well, I really want to, I'd rather spend my money there than ship it off to California, these big monoculture crops. And, you know, I don't really know what's happening there, as opposed to the guy down the street or a girl down the street that I know and trust. But there's a social economy to food that's, you know, just like you said, sharing something with your neighbors that maybe you don't necessarily connect on a lot of levels, but you could connect through a dinner or a meal. You know, when I was a kid, my best memories when I was a kid was my great grandma in Paterson, New Jersey, would have this Christmas dinner where she invited the whole neighborhood over. And, you know, there were 40, 50 people in her basement. She made tons of food. It was a huge spread. That's where I got my passion for cooking. So that social economy is mm-hmm. is important to me, too. We're lucky enough that when I look out in the dining room, we don't see a lot of people on their cell phones, like, you know, unless they're taking pictures. They're not just like going through a meal and like just, you know, just
scrolling
like
Twitter.
Scrolling Twitter or Instagram or whatever. they're actually connecting with each other. And those are the special moments in the restaurant. Like when I see people holding hands and they're eating dinner, that's really special to me. So I appreciate that about food. There's a definite social economy that comes behind everything that we do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think food's probably, you know, one of the most accessible ways for people to see new cultures. You know, I mean, like, of course, like, you know, the food is, you know, it's great. You know, it's interesting. But, like, it's really, like, the stories behind the food, you know, the people behind the food that, you know, I find to be the most, you know, most gratifying to learn about that versus, you know, here's the product, but let me tell you why you know, why I made this product, why, you know, the stories behind it, the history. I mean, you sometimes it's you'll see a whole country's history, you know, the influences behind it presented in a dish. You see, you know, just so much presented on one plate, it's incredible. And like, it's something that, you know, even in a city like Syracuse, you can go out and find dozens, hundreds of different, you know, cuisines and cultures and different people that you wouldn't have maybe otherwise crossed paths with. And all for just the price of a dinner, you can learn a little bit about them, which is, it's amazing.
Let me just wrap up with maybe a short answer question for all of you. How good a food city is Syracuse? And maybe tied in there, what are your hopes for it? Fritz, let's start with you.
Oh boy, it's a tough one. Syracuse is, so I grew up in Vermont. I compare Syracuse to Burlington in the late 90s. That's kind of where I feel like it's at. Burlington now has a very progressive food scene, and I'm watching that grow, which is, it's awesome to see.
And be part of.
Yeah, and be part of. I think it's a good food city that's getting better every day.
Adam?
I think we have great assets, right? We have great local agriculture, great urban agriculture, and we have a really diverse talent pool. So I can't wait to see what 5-10 years brings.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, for a city of Syracuse's size, it's impressive, you know, for a city of, you know, relatively smallish city. I mean, I think we have a bunch of different options compared to other cities like this. And it is. It's exciting. I feel like it's still, I don't want to say it's in its infancy, but it's growing, you know, and it's still early. But I feel like what Rich said, I think it's well on its way to being even more. So I'm excited.
All right, great. Well, I want to thank you all for joining us. We've covered a lot of ground and table. We've heard about Syracuse's food identity, how that's changing, what factors are behind some of the new and different cuisine and concepts in dining, or just getting something to eat. I want to thank Jacob Pucci, food and dining writer for Syracuse.com, Adam Sudman, creative force behind the Salt City Market and founder of My Lucky Tummy, and Rich Strube, chef and partner of Eden Restaurant in Hanover Square. Just ahead, we'll take a stroll around Syracuse to pop into some of the examples of the city's food scene with the help of the Downtown Committee. We'll hear just what makes for a successful restaurant business from some of the people who've created their ideas. I'm News Director Chris Bolt with WAER reporter and announcer Katie Zilkowski. This is Syracuse Speaks on 88.3 FM, WAER Syracuse.
Whether we realize it or not, the relationships we have with people in our lives are constantly changing. For better or worse, it is a natural part of life. I'm Mary Louise Kelly, and there is one relationship you can always rely on, your relationship with WAER. You listen for thoughtful news and conversations, and those only get stronger with your support. This relationship matters, so please show your support today by becoming radioactive. Give at WAER.org, and thanks.
Italian, Mexican, and all the other ethnic foods that I've dabbled with, the way the ramen is totally different is you think, oh, it's just throw some bones, some water, and some vegetables in. You know, it couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, you have to build those flavors. None of them are being built for you.
Welcome back to Syracuse Speaks as we discuss Syracuse's changing food identity. I'm Katie Zilkowski.
And I'm Chris Bolt. If you ask people about the Syracuse restaurant scene, most are pretty positive, pretty enthusiastic. Everyone has her or his favorites, but most quickly can tick off a list of what you might call legacy restaurants that many people know and a lot of new things.
Just about everybody we talked to for this segment mentioned popular places such as Dinosaur Barbecue, Pastabilities, Kitty Hoyne's, and others that have stayed successful for a long time. But they were also excited about newcomers, such as Eden, St. Urban, Defi, and a range of ethnic food ventures that add to the area's choices and vibrancy.
I had a chance to take a stroll with Downtown Committee President Marika Trier to check in on the food scene and meet with some of the purveyors of your breakfast, lunch, or dinner, see what they're doing, how they're making their mark, and hear what they think about the Syracuse food scene. We strolled into Margaritas in Armory Square during a fairly busy lunch hour.
Alejandro Gonzalez. Owner, manager, probably about like 5 months.
How's it been going?
Pretty good. It's been really good. Yeah. And I started here as a server, and I worked my way up. And then after a while, you know, I thought this spot right here, this spot specifically, would be a great fit for a Mexican place with the vibe and the music and everything that we bring. Yeah. Location is key. And then food, and then the vibe, the atmosphere, the music, pretty much it has to blend in all to make it work.
I would just like the owner's perspectives, and it gives you such an appreciation for the passion that they have for the food that they're preparing, and I think that's part of the neat element about a downtown or a neighborhood location as well, is you get to know who is making the food, who is owning the restaurant, who is the vision behind it.
David Hoyne, owner of Kitty Hoyne's. Kitty Hoyne's opened up July of 1999 in Armory Square here. We discovered the old Crown Bar and Grill. Looked like you were walking into a pub in Dublin. So it was a great fit. It's an old building. It dates back to the 1890s. It used to be right next door to the main train station. And there used to be a hotel rooms right up top. So, you know, we're not going to be maybe that fine dining special occasion place, but we would like it to be your favorite place to go, where you can bring your family, you can meet up after work. We like to look on our service as, well, our hospitality really, because they're two different things, but our hospitality and our food, to have that stand out, be the difference.
We've had some great successes with some of our food channel networks, highlighting some of the typical Syracuse locations and Pastabilities and Kitty Hoyne's, and Dinosaur certainly is one of those locations. So people, when they think about Syracuse, they have restaurants that they've heard of. Social media also helps with that, but it's certainly a place that they want to come and visit and explore and experience. How are you? Yes, we are heading into Epicuse, which is one of our newer downtown food establishments, but also restaurants participating in our Dining Weeks promotion. They opened in November.
Very great.
So we are going to meet with Nicole Simolis, who is one of the owners.
So welcome to Epicuse. So we have our prepared foods area, which is a big driver for people who live and work downtown. And then we have our pantry, sundry area, where these are all small batch producers from across the country. We have a number of local producers, and then we really seek out unique products from across the country. And then when we have some other brands that maybe are a little more recognizable, might be a little bit bigger companies, what we're really doing is researching their sustainability practices, their fair trade practices, and so keeping our core in line with all the vendors that we're working with. And then in the back, there's a little bar back there which will be featuring craft beers, craft spirits, and then just really awesome wines.
So at the downtown committee, we try to make it as easy as possible for people to locate in the downtown district. So oftentimes we are receiving the phone calls from people that may be interested in a certain location or would like to explore downtown. So we're able to help them understand what spaces are available where, what is the audience within that immediate vicinity, what does the other competition look like down here, what are ways in which we can promote the business, so with the Dining Weeks being one of them. We're able to help paint the picture for prospective tenants, what is happening in downtown, and might this be a good fit for you. Have arrived at the Bryanwell Eatery.
Devin Hubbard. Our cuisine is, I strive every day to make food that is wholesome, real ingredients. We're making everything in-house every single day. We're buying from local farms and producers as much as possible. You know, it's picnic fare, I guess, per se. You know, we got baked beans and salt potatoes and hot dogs, hamburgers, you know, stuff like that. The idea of the garbage plate, and we use it as two bases, a couple meats, condiment, sauce, and veggies. We were adding a different option.
What do you think about the restaurant scene? You've seen comings and goings and so on. I mean, what do you think our scene is like?
Ever evolving? How about that? No, it's been interesting to see the evolution of the restaurants. We have a lot of restaurants that have been here for quite some time, your Pastabilities and Dinosaur and Kitty Hoyne's. But have the newer restaurants joining the mix too, so.
I mean, comparatively to 10 years ago, we are leaps and bounds from where it was. There's new places popping up every day, every week there's something new, or people adding something new to their menus or whatever. And, you know, it's definitely evolved with the addition of the food hall that's going to be going in. There's so much more ethnic cuisine coming down into the city.
I think it's great in Armory Square that you have so many different entities, so many different restaurants, different, everybody has a different menu and a different style. That's what makes this area work, and I think we are the envy of a lot of places.
A lot of variety, and I think this is what was missing here. And now it's here, and I think we have a full, you know, there's food from pretty much every country in the world here.
I think chefs used to look outside for influences and kind of overlooking what was available here.
It's surprising how important it is to a lot of people. We have people who have come in and asked about our eggs, which is from a local farmer. With our milk that we have here, it's a pasteurized milk, but not homogenized. It's healthier for you. So people are really very interested in healthy foods, sustainability, vegan, gluten-free. So we're just really catering to the needs of our consumers.
And I suppose the younger generation now, they're certainly looking forward. So they are creating their own vibe, looking for different things. So competition is great for everybody. Keeps you new, keeps you inventing. Syracuse is a great place to dine out.
I want to thank Marika Trier and Alice Majeri from the Downtown Committee for helping and going along with our food stroll around downtown. You heard from David Hoyne from Kitty Hoyne's, Nicole Samolas from Epicuse, Alejandro Gonzalez of Margarita's Mexican Cantina, and Devin Hubbard, owner of the Brinewell Eatery. They all play a role in creating the diversity and, from what we heard, the changing identity of Syracuse's food scene.
Thanks for listening to Syracuse Speaks. If you want to listen to this program again or listen to past Syracuse Speaks programs, you can go to our website, waer.org. Syracuse Speaks is a production of Syracuse Public Media with production assistance by Allegra Craver and Kevin Kloss. For WAER News Director Chris Bolt, I'm reporter and host Katie Zolkowski. This is 88.3 FM WAER Syracuse.